Hello and welcome to the Marketing Meetup podcast. I'm Joe. Thank you very, very much for listening today. Today we have a session which I don't think I've ever had more texts before or after a session than today. And that's because it's with Sir John Hegarty. He is a human being who is an actual legend of the advertising scene, of the marketing industry in general. The man responsible for lines such as Vorsprung der Technik for Audi, for iconic ads such as Levi's, Stonewashed Laundrette advert, Flat Eric. He is the person responsible behind many, many cultural shifting moments. And he just happens to be really nice, which is brilliant. In this session, we speak all about the business of creativity, as focusing on creativity in a very general way, as well as quite a specific one. The thing that I loved about Sir John was his approachability, but also the sheer passion that he spoke about creativity as a concept. You couldn't help but be swept along as he spoke in today's session. I don't need to describe it anymore, but what I do need to do before I hand over to John with the first question is just say a big thank you to this week's featured sponsor, who is a company called Exclaimer. Now, Exclaimer do something very simple, but they do it very well. Exclaimer enable you to manage your email signatures centrally. That means that they make it super easy for you to change the email signatures of your employees, which for those of you who have ever tried to get more than 10 people to change their signature independently and consistently will know the headache. But then they also enable you to use your email signature as a marketing channel. For example, they can help you integrate your Facebook feed into your signature, which really amplifies the messages of your company's Facebook activity. It's a really simple solution to a problem which, when you've felt it, you know, you really feel it. So I definitely take the moment to check out Exclaimer. And if you mention the Marketing Meetup in the How You Found Out About Us box, then you get 20% off your subscription too. With all that said, now's the time to pass over to myself and to John with an initial question all about how Sir John defines creativity and why it's important. I hope you enjoy.
Well, I mean, the first thing about creativity is that we're all creative. So when we talk about this, the trouble that we have is people think it's something else. They think it's something you occasionally do. You aren't creative, or you are. We are all creative. And it's how we express ourselves, how we take in information, how we inform the world about ourselves. So it's fundamental to who we are. That's the first thing. And therefore, you know, and that's why I describe creativity as an expression of self. You know, that's what you're doing. And, you know, the way you talk, the way you dress, the way you eat, the way you cook, the way you live, where you go on holiday, these are all partly creative decisions. Yes, they're monetary decisions, they're conveniences, but they are influenced by creativity. So it is fundamental to who we are, and it's therefore fundamental to business. And if you think about it, again, you know, I spent my career talking to companies, and some of them would understand it, and others would go, well, occasionally we engage with creativity. And of course, you say to them, well, no, it's creativity should be center of everything you do, and it's how you define yourself. And actually, starting a business is a creative act. You have to have an idea. What are you going to make? What are you going to do? What are you going to call it? How are you going to present it? How are you going to talk to people? All these things are driven by creativity. So it's much more, I kind of liken it to breathing. You know, it's how we exist, except it's about our own philosophy and our personality and our character. So creativity is crucial and fundamental to who we are.
I love that. I mean, it's such a beautiful way of phrasing things. I mean, with that thought in mind, though, that still, to me, it feels like, you know, I understand the words you say, but then I go, okay, how do I do it? You know, because an expression of self is quite tricky. So can creativity, I don't know, be taught? You know, can folks sort of learn to be creative? Or is it, does one have to go on a journey of self-exploration to be able to find one's creative self based on what you've just said?
Well, the first thing, like anything, is understanding it. First of all, understanding that we are creative. that we're all creative, defining it, because actually when you ask people to define it, what they resort to is the process of creativity. They talk about kind of, you know, putting things together that you've not seen before and making something else and, you know, challenging you in some way. Those are the, that's the process of creativity. The fundamental principle of creativity is, as I said, is this expression of self. And if I, you know, how many times have you heard an author, a filmmaker, a painter, whatever, talking about their new work? And they would so often say, what I wanted to say was this. And that's expression of self. So how you become at ease with that is understand it. You know, oh, I see. That's the definition of creativity. Two types of creativity, which I could talk about. Understand that. What is at the foundation of creativity? Understand that. If you understand all these, and they're not difficult. I'm not talking about, you know, you have to have a PhD. It's not like quantum physics. Well, fuck what that is. I have no idea. Even I've had explained to me 15 times. You know, it's so core to who you are. And that once you understand all these things, it's easy. And then you just enjoy it. And I think the wonderful thing, I mean, I'm very lucky. I went to art school to design school and then into advertising. So in a way, I've lived my life in this kind of, or my adult life in this kind of work. And I sort of understand why people can feel hesitant about it, because you're made in some ways to feel hesitant about it. You know, some people keep you out as opposed to embrace you. And creativity is about embracing. It's about bringing you in. It's about getting you to understand more about yourself. So not only, I mean, if you, sorry, this is a great plug for the business of creativity, by the way, advertising. I should get a lad for it, shouldn't I? But one of the things that I really loved about doing this course, writing it, is that it's fantastic for business, fantastic for people in the business. But also I think people come away from it going, oh, I really feel much better about myself, because we talk about how you lead a creative life. And I'm not saying, you know, about going to a gallery or going to an opening of a show or going to the theater, or just every day. And it's a bit like, again, somebody who practices yoga, you know, they do it because it's not just they do it an hour a week or 2 hours, whatever it might be. They do it to feel better. And I think once you understand creativity, once you understand how it impacts on your life, or you'll feel much better about life.
I love that. I think we have these moments with our sessions so regularly where we come in and we kind of take a lot of the fear out of things, and you know, everything you've spoken about already sort of speaks to inclusivity, but it also just speaks to relaxing just a little bit, which is a lovely way to end the session, you know, which is just really, 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 really quite lovely.
It's a therapy. It's a therapy, yeah.
I love that. In your book, I wanted to pick up on this, because this idea of an expression of self, then in your book, which I just had lying about, then you spoke about fearlessness as something that feels important to you as part of creativity. And I wanted to, when I read that, I was interested whether that's an expression of your own self, whether you are a fearless person, or whether you feel like it's a necessary ingredient to creativity. And indeed, if it is a necessary ingredient to creativity, whether one can cultivate that as an attitude.
Well, I think when I talk about fearlessness, I you know, there are lots of different types of creativity. There's applied and there's pure, and that, we don't need to go into that now, but the course goes into that. But when you're working in the communications industry, what you're in an incredibly competitive environment, you're trying to get your message to stand out against somebody else's message. You've got to create something that is going to be noticed. You've got to create something that people are going to resonate with. And you can't afford to be just nice. Mm-hmm. You can't afford to be, yeah, that's kind of good. I quite like that. That's okay. Because, you know, I mean, I don't know who counts these things, but apparently we're exposed to something like 8,000 marketing messages a day. God knows how. I mean, I've just got up. I don't know how. I should be up to about 1,000 already. How's that happened? I don't know. But whatever, you know, how you measure those things. But whatever we know, we're exposed to a huge amount of messaging in whatever forms of the kind of world we live in. So therefore, you've got to create work that is going to stand out. Because if it isn't standing out, go home now. You know, pack your bags, go home, make yourself a nice cup of coffee, and put your legs up. You know, because you're not going to go. So, and then to do that, you really have to challenge yourself, and you have to create something new every day. You know, if you're, and I talk about this a bit, but if you're in certain creative industries, you can go on repeating yourself. You know, I mean, Mick Jagger goes around the world singing "Jumping Jack Flash," and I mean, they wrote it in 1966, and, you know, but he can still go on stage today and, you know, 30,000 people will turn up and applaud him for it. Well, you know, I couldn't pull out some old ad I'd done in 1966 and go, this is the answer. So you're in a business where you've got to come in every day and have a new idea. And that idea really can't be like yesterday's idea. You know, there isn't a formula to it. There are principles behind it, but there isn't a formula. So fearlessness becomes crucial to the maintenance of your career, that you've got to keep challenging yourself. You've got to keep going. I did that, fine, that was it. You know, I can't do that again tomorrow. I can't walk into somebody else and say, you know, I did Vorsprung durch Technik, and now you're Italian, so I'm going to give you an Italian end line. And that, you know, hold on, John, you did that for Audi. You can't go on doing that. So you've got to have this sense of you're creating something different every day. And that's very, very challenging. And I talk a lot about how you can make that exciting as opposed to just challenging. But fearlessness is a part of that. And I think if you look at, you know, if you look at great art, you know, you look at someone like Picasso. I mean, let's not compare ourselves to Picasso, but he was a genius. You know, he just said, right, I've done cubism. You know, he could have gone on doing cubism for all his life, really, and he'd done very well with it. He just said, no, I've got to move on. I've got to keep moving on. And, you know, if you read his biography, you'll see that's what he had to do. He had to challenge himself, and he had to go, I'm just going to paint a picture, and it's called Dora Maar, and the eye is up here, the nose is down here, the head's like that. And people, maybe they're just going to laugh at me. But he didn't know. He said, I want to change the way you look at a picture. So his fearlessness was there, and you see it in lots of other things. You see it in film directors. You know, they make a movie and, you know, they've got to move on from that movie to the next one. They've got to keep going forward. And that sense of fearlessness is fundamentally important.
I love that. We've already got Carly in the chat saying, I was once described by my boss as not creative at all, which has haunted me ever since. I think today I might finally help me let that go, which is...
Well, Carly, whoever said that to you, I think that is truly, truly appalling, absolutely appalling. You know, just to say that and go back to that, look, it's like we can all sing, okay? Everybody can sing. Now, I can promise you, you do not want to hear me sing. But I could, if I went to singing classes, sing better. So to somebody say to you, you're not creative, is the most stupid, it's their stupidity. So, you know, you're right, they're wrong.
I love that. Thank you very much. I think that's set the world to right, and hopefully Carl's world to right as well. With that thought in mind, when you were sort of speaking about pushing yourself forward every day, I'm interested because I heard a story about you speaking about pitching the idea of Flat Eric three times and sort of going back with the same idea. And I think in the story, you kind of said that eventually they kind of just got wound down and sort of said, yeah, all right, let's do it type of thing. But, you know, I'm interested in that thing about like when you keep on moving forward versus when you decide to sort of stick on an idea and sort of, you know, sort of say, this is the one, you know, and how you know basically that a creative idea is the one that is worth keep on pushing and keep on going and, you know, keep on going. Because like you couldn't have known, presumably, but you must have had something within you that must have,
yeah,
you keep on pushing that forward.
It's a really interesting question, that, because I think it's, again, if you're leading, and I'm not talking like a monk. You're leading a creative life. And if you're aware, sensitive to things, see things, watch things, look at things, you kind of develop a sense of kind of what will and what won't work. It's not 100%, because this is the wonderful thing about it, that nobody knows. That great line from William Goldman's book, one of the great screenwriters, you know, in Hollywood, nobody really knows, you know, they all guess. But you develop a sort of sixth sense for things, and it's about excitement. But again, I have my little formula. I do a triangle for how I think about an idea. And my triangle, which I will give to you, is at the very, very top. Is it memorable? Because if it's not memorable, as I've said before, go home now. You know, just go home. You've forgotten. You've failed. Then at the other tip, is it motivating? And you stop me. Oh, that's interesting. And then at the other end, and this is absolutely crucial, is it truthful? Because great creativity is built on truth, all right? It isn't a fabrication. I mean, yes, you can fabricate, of course you can, but it's built on truth. And if you've got this kind of triangle of assessment, you can kind of navigate things and you can go, oh, I see, that works on that level. And it challenges you. But with that, I just felt, I mean, people did say to me in the agency, John, have you gone mad? Because, you know, we were used to creating these heroes for Levi's that were kind of chiseled and handsome and, you know, Brad Pitt, for heaven's sake, we had one of them. And I just felt that a character that challenged the way you felt about heroes and partnership and things like that could be really, really interesting. And it could capture people's imagination. And I just saw one of your questions there, but is it truthful? Yes, it was truthful. We were talking about, within that, the brief was a new kind of relationship. Instead of it being a single hero, what we should do is have a relationship, because everybody felt that would be quite good. And so we kind of talked about Jack Kerouac on the road and stuff like that. And I thought that was great. And that's how I presented the idea. I said, it's, you know, to Levi's, it's Jack Kerouac on the road, about the relationship between these two people. And, you know, and they were getting excited. Oh, great, Kerouac on the road. We really love it. And I just said, there's just one thing I haven't told you. And they said, what's that? Well, one of them is a fluffy yellow puppet. And they did think I'd gone mad as well. Right? And I explained it. And I said, what I'm trying to do is get you to think about relationships and about how they work. So that was its truth. It was a truth going to find a way of exposing a different kind of relationship. And that they're unique, like this is a unique relationship. And that was at the foundation of it. And eventually they were lovely. They were a great client. And they turned it down the first time. I went back the second time and said, look, I really think you've got to think about this. And I did some extra work on it. And they went, no, 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 John, we just, no, 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 we can't, no, no. And then I went back the third time. And I think they just went, oh, God, he's coming back with that bloody idea of, oh, flattery, oh, jeez. And I got them to buy it, and they were brilliant. And it was a phenomenal success. My great regret with it, and I always say, was you always have a great regrets with it. I wanted them to also buy like the back cover of Vogue and the back cover of GQ and just have Flat Eric on the back cover instead of it being Armani. You know, it'd be Flat Eric. I just thought that would have been hilarious, you know, posing like some sort of male model. But it didn't happen. And that's again about how you use the media. Because it would have been brilliant, wouldn't it? You know, it's again how media infects an idea. And it's one of the things that we've forgotten in the digital age. We've sort of forgotten how, you know, the medium is the message and media is fundamentally important, which is why I think Banksy is such an amazing artist. And you know, and he's used, you know, the outside, he's used walls as his media. And if he'd just done everything on a canvas in a gallery, he wouldn't be the same artist, would he? No, so it's just a demonstration of how media is fundamentally important.
I'd love that. And there's so much that comes to mind. I mean, the one that does sort of strike me is combining your thoughts about the media, so sort of like the TikTok generation and stuff like that, with your idea of truthfulness and the idea that sort of TikTok is creating thousands of cultures in any one sort of day, any week period, and any month. I would assume in a slightly different way to what happened sort of 20, 30 years ago, where you would have a cultural moment which could live for 2 or 3 months, etc. Is it harder to be truthfully creative these days, or do you need to go back to that sort of human sort of truth every time to be able to still sort of be relevant?
Yeah. Well, I always say principles remain, but practices change. And I think you have to kind of work out how you're going to use media, what you're going to do with it, the part it plays, what it's good at, what it's not good at, you know. And I don't think we have those conversations enough about, yep, TikTok is great. What it's really good at is this. Understanding that, and understanding then how I should use it and what part it should play in my marketing program. And I think actually TikTok is, you know, all these new media that we've got are fantastic. I think what's failing to happen is people understanding how best to use them and how they play a part in a broader, wider spectrum of their campaign. And as I say, somewhere you've got to say, how am I going to create a dialogue with a mass audience in some shape or form? Where do I start the debate? Where do I start a point of view about my company, my product, my service, whatever it might be? How do I do it? And then what other elements of that do I use to keep that conversation going? And I think there isn't enough conversation around that of people, this is how I did it, this is how you did it, this is how we, because we always use example. Example is fundamentally important to how we learn. And there aren't enough examples out there of people saying, actually, this is how we did it, and it worked because of that kind of product, and we were talking to that kind of audience. Then we went into a broadcast scenario, and how you define broadcast is entirely up to you. And this is how we built the campaign. And I don't see enough of that. And as I say, that's how you learn. You know, we learn actually by copying. You know, when you go to art school, you copy. You go in and you look at artists and you copy what they do. And you go, well, that's how they did that. Then you go on and then you do your own thing. You develop your own style. You know, it's like if you've watched, you know, documentary about the Beatles, how they just played other people's songs. You talk about the Rolling Stones. They learned how, you know, Muddy Waters played his guitar. They learned it. And then they went, oh, wow, now I've got that. Now I develop my stuff. But what they were doing was they were learning from what had gone before or what was happening around them, whatever, and then taking it into their own world. And I think today we don't have enough of that sort of learning going on, nice, of experience. And I think it's crucial. And if you don't do that, you're not going to grow. You're not going to say, well, that was very good what they did and that's how they've done it. And I think it's by example that we grow and that we learn. Crucial. It isn't copying, it's fundamental. You know, it's how we learn, as I say.
100%. So who are you learning from at the moment?
It's a good question. I spend most of my time thinking, you know, I try and behave. I mean, it sounds stupid, of course. I think of myself as the audience. I don't think of myself as within an industry. Mm-hmm. I think of myself as the, what do I like? What do I like watching? What do I like seeing? What do I like reading? Where do I go? Where am I getting my influences? I don't look at advertising. I don't, you know, I used to say I work in advertising. I don't live in advertising. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're fundamentally doing is you're bringing the outside world into your world, and then you're reflecting that back out again. So, you know, I always said when I was, you know, writing and working with, I was an art director, but I became more of a writer, I suppose, in the end. I was reflecting the broader culture. I was trying to see and read as much as I could possibly read and bring that into my work. I didn't want to create work that looked like advertising. I just didn't. I didn't, because I didn't like most advertising. I think most advertising is crap. You know, 90% of it is shit. I mean, you'd want to copy that. I mean, for God's sake, you know, I'd much rather go and see a great movie, or go and see a great bit of television, or go and see a great play and see how they wrote, or read poetry, or listen to Leonard Cohen, how he writes. You know, what an inspiring way to write if you're thinking about writing copy. Listen to Leonard Cohen, you know, listen to Nick Cave. You'll learn more from that. Or, you know, one of the best books I mentioned him, if you're in the advertising industry to read, of course, my two are just absolutely brilliant, of course, that. is William Goldman, who is one of the great screenwriters. And you'll learn more from William Goldman about how to write for video, film, or whatever it is you're doing than you will from a book on advertising. But he writes about film. He doesn't mention advertising once. But he talks about how you write for a visual medium. And I think it's things like that that you have to do. You know, as I said, I worked in advertising. I didn't live in advertising. And you see people who just get wound into an industry and they can't see beyond it and outside it. And of course, the people they're talking to, they don't think like that. They just look at good stuff. They're fascinated by what's interesting, what's distinctive, what's daring, what's different. And you can be part of that, or you can live in a silly world called advertising. Who wants to, you know, why do that?
It's so true. I was listening this morning to The Rest is Entertainment, which is a fabulous podcast. And they were speaking about Channel 5, and they were speaking about the documentaries which Channel 5 make. And it's not like, you know, high art sort of stuff. But the thing that they sort of say is, you know, they've made four documentaries about air fryers, because that's the stuff that, you know, people are actually thinking about, you know, and actually care about.
And make it funny, you know, make it funny, you know. That's the other thing too.
Well, I love that. And I know that we've got Dave Harland watching in today, who's a very funny man, who I definitely recommend people take in his work for inspiration.
Brilliant.
There was a quote that I remember hearing you speak about, which was, if they're not smiling, then they're not buying. And I wanted to loop this into the idea of pitching in. So there's folks who will be watching in today who have to pitch in the idea of a creative idea to their relative stakeholders. And we were having this chat last week with Tom Roach and Grace Kite about, you know, there probably is enough evidence in marketing now to convince or at least show what to do to almost anyone about anything. But the thing that is missing quite often is this sense of emotion in the pitch, you know, a fear, a laugh, or whatever it may be. And I was interested in your gauge on how one approaches pitches and infusing emotion into these pitches, and knowing which emotion is the right one to pick. Because I think this is something that we can show stats and we can show graphs all day long, but I love this idea that you sort of speak to emotion. So, like, I wondered if you have any pitching stories where you could sort of speak to this emotion.
Well, I always, that when we were pitching, when we started BBH, we refused to do speculative creative pitches. We pitched. We wouldn't do speculative creative pitches because we felt we were giving away the thing that was most valuable, the thing that we valued beyond anything else. So in that period of time, and it sort of was kind of in the first 20 years of the agency, and I'll say why we changed it. But when we pitched, what you're trying to do in a pitch is you're trying to kind of capture your client's imagination. You're trying to get them to understand what the future could be like. And we talked a lot about strategically getting things right. And that was the brilliance of someone like, say, John Bark, who was a brilliant, brilliant planner. And we said, first thing, you've got to get your strategy right, because that's the foundation upon which everything is built. Once you've got that right, then you can start doing great creative work. And that's when I would come in and I would have to talk about a vision for the future. Mm-hmm. This is how I see where you could go. These are the kind of things that I want to do. And the idea of a pitch isn't to show somebody a piece of work. The idea of a pitch is to get that client walking out feeling great. That's the answer. Now, everybody thinks you do it with a piece of work. Well, the trouble with a piece of work is they look at it and they go, well, I don't know. I don't like green. You didn't know that, did you? You know, they don't like green. Who told me? Why didn't you find out? And so when you reduce everything down to kind of the practicalities, you miss the bigger picture. And the idea of a pitch is to make a client feel, wow, these are truly, truly talented people. I really like talking to them. I could have a fabulous conversation with them. But God, do they make me feel excited about tomorrow? And if you can do that, then that's how you win the pitch. And I think if you can't do that, then you're reduced to doing what everybody else does. Now, we did change and we started doing spectrum creative work because as the business became global, we couldn't have everybody in the same room. And we had to then start showing a piece of work. But I tried to keep it. Instead of showing the actual work, what I tried to do is create a video of this is what you will feel like. This is what we're saying. This is the point of view we have. And give them something to walk away with that they could put into a, in those days, a cassette recorder and play and go, wow, I like that. You know, that makes me feel great. So, but it didn't change. You're still trying to sell the future. You're trying to sell a future that's exciting, that's full of opportunity. And if you can convince a client that that's what you fundamentally believe in and that you have the answer to that, you'll win the business. But if you just reduce it down to here's a piece of work, I'm sure they don't know how to judge it. You know, how often do they judge a script? How often do they, look at a piece of advertising and go, oh, I would have bought that or wouldn't have bought that. They don't know. So you've got to remember that.
I love that. Thank you. We've got Dan saying, just got goosebumps in the chat here. So folks, we've got 14 open questions in the Q&A right now. The thing that I'd encourage you to do is give a thumbs up to any questions that you'd love us to prioritize, just so we can make sure that we get to those as well. We've got Sophie in the chat as well saying absolute gold from Sergio.
Thank you, Sophie.
I wanted to follow up very quickly on that, and it only needs to be a short answer if possible. But one thing that I've struggled with as a marketer is I've sold very well to the initial stakeholder who I happen to be in the room with, but then I haven't necessarily been able to pass things up the line. And I guess in the situation for marketers watching in today, as you've said, folks are distributed around the world. They then have to take that sense of excitement and pass it up the line. Have you ever, presumably you've experienced that, but have you ever found a neat solution for that at all? This is a very personal problem. I'm getting free consultancy here.
That's right, Joe. Yeah. Well, it's a very good question, that actually, because I do remember quite early on in my career, I realized that, I thought when I sold the client the ad, that was it. That was it. So I hadn't quite realized that they had to take the idea themselves and sell it within the company. And that, it was an awakening I had, an epiphany of saying, oh my God, I've got to. So, the way you do that is, I think, again, it goes back to my thing about you've got to think about that person now selling the idea within the company. What are they going to say? What tools are you giving them to say, this is why we should do that? This is what the competition are doing. This is the opportunity. So you've got to give them the tools, the phrases, the neat arguments, because they have got to take it and go, right, I'm going to show it to my, financial director, or who's going to release the funds, or I've got to show it to the chairman. So you've got to think about how they sell that idea within the company. And there are a million ways of doing that, but within your argument to them has got to be the argument that they are going to take to everybody else. So it's got to have some foundation to it that actually is replicable. They've got to be able to take it and do it again. And sometimes that is very, very difficult. Sometimes, people are having to kind of sell something that can be hard. But you give them all the tools. Competitive marketplace. We're losing market share. We're losing it to these people. Give them the simple narrative that they take and say, and here's the solution to it. And then I think, one, you'll get a fan from that particular client, but actually will help them sell within the company, which is crucially important. It really, really is.
Yeah. Love that. Thank you very much. Well, you know, we're going to go and do that now. So thank you. Dead helpful. Let's make sure we take some questions from the community, because I'm interested in a bunch of things, but the most important thing is the folks watching in today. And when I encourage the thumbs up, then there's an explosion of thumbs up to this question from Rob, who says, what was your least effective but most creative ad ever? What was wrong with it and why didn't it work?
Well, now, you see, I think I don't dwell on failure. I just said, when you doing what you're doing, working in the world you're in, you've got to come in every day and have a new idea. That idea can't be like yesterday. If you dwell on failure, you'll suddenly go, oh, that didn't work. Oh, why didn't that work? Oh, gosh. And it'll begin to inhibit you. And so, oh, I better not do that. Oh, that last thing I did was very, very different and it didn't work. Yeah, it's going to happen. You know, every film Tarantino's made hasn't been a huge success. You know, it isn't. And you just have to accept that it's going to be like that. But if you start going back and looking at failure, what was it? It was creative, but it didn't work. You'll get yourself into a complete mire. Do not do it. Fine. If you're researching a new drug, you need to kind of work out what failed, what didn't fail. You are doing something quite different. You are creating something new every day. And yes, some things are going to go wrong, some things aren't going to work. Put it behind you, move on. And remember, be daring. Be fearless, because if you don't, it's all over. You know, you'll start repeating yourselves, your career will go into decline, and then, you know, people will say, nah, that John, he's lost it, really. So you've got to keep challenging. So that's the way I answer that question.
Perfect. I love it. And it speaks to the themes of what you've spoken about today already, with your first answer about keeping on moving forward, the fearlessness that we've spoken about. It's almost like you're a consistent human being, John, who shows up as yourself, almost like it. That's a fabulous answer. What happens in the Q&A now is that we'll end up ping-ponging between a lot of different topics, so I hope you don't mind that.
Good. Sure, anything.
So the next question comes from Anonymous, who asks, which brands or companies do you think are excelling at their creative campaigns right now?
Well, that actually is a very pertinent and a very good question. I think very, very few. I was a great fan of, and it's now about 5 or 6 years old now, Oakley, the oat milk. And I think they had done a brilliant, brilliant job at building a kind of brand in a very, very ordinary market, you know, oat milk. I mean, but they turned it into something exciting. And it went back to my thing of, Don't just build a brand, build a movement. And what they had done is built a movement around oat milk, which is, you know, the first milk for humans. And, you know, milk is fine for cows, but not you. And it was just brilliant. It was funny. They used broadcast media, of course, because they were talking to the world. That was obvious. But they did it with humor. It was brilliant through the line thinking. I thought it was great. I still love it when Marmite do what they do. But I see very little today. I see very little advertising that stands up for something and has a point of view and is trying to change the way you feel or think. Because that's what great advertising does. You know, it changes the way you feel or think, and it thinks of itself as a movement. If you go right back into the history of advertising and look at the Volkswagen advertising of the 60s, it was changing your point of view about cars. They didn't have to be big. They didn't have to change every year. You know, you could think small, not think big, or, you know, whatever. And this, you look at Nike, you know, just do it. It was a kind of, you know, it wasn't just selling you a running shoe. It was selling you a way of living, a way of being. And I think advertising at its best does that. And I think it's a little of that at the moment, of people really wanting to go out and become a part of culture. Because if you're a part of culture, you become more valuable and you become more famous, and more famous means you can charge more and do all the things that a brand wants to do. And I see very few brands doing that today, apart from the odd ones I've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Very few.
You know, I appreciate that answer, and I think it's an interesting thing.
Somebody said, "So you buy Marmite regularly?" No, I hate it. I am the hater of Marmite, but I adore their campaign. The fact that they're talking to people who actually don't buy it, isn't that brilliant? It's genius.
I love that. We got "Yes, Sir John" in capital letters here from Tia, which is fabulous. And once again, it sort of speaks to the fearlessness point. I think, again, I'm placing myself in the shoes of, well, I'm projecting myself here rather than speaking for marketing in general. But I think one operates in a field of sometimes fearful of negative outcomes rather than imagining the positive outcome. And you've sort of spoken about that with your... you know, sort of selling the future as well with the pitch and stuff like that.
Creativity is about positivity. It really is. You know, I say all great creative people are optimists. I mean, they might look miserable because it's the 448th idea that hasn't worked. But deep down, they're optimists because you genuinely believe that you're going to change the world with this idea. And you have that. Even though you know it's probably not going to get bought, you know, one in 20 ideas get made, or I don't know what the thing. But you have to remain an optimist. You know, pessimism kills creativity, and optimism expands it. It drives it. You know,
I love that. I want to just ask you, as someone who isn't always naturally optimistic. Is that something that's just part of you, or what keeps you optimistic when you're in the ad space? Because it's easy to let cynicism, creep in. So how do you do that?
I don't know. Maybe it's genetic. Maybe I don't. I was kind of born with that look on the positive rather than the negative. You know, You can look at anything and see the negative, and don't surround yourself with negative people. Get rid of them. Get rid of them. They will drag you down. They'll drag your thinking down. They'll drag your optimism down. Get rid of them because nobody solved anything by being negative. Yeah. You solve things by being positive. And that's what you're trying to do all the time. Positivity. Mm-hmm. And I think you've just got to, you know, and I read great stuff, be inspired by great things. You know, I say, you know, if you read shit, you'll think shit and you'll create shit. So read great stuff, be inspired. And it begins like everything in life. It rubs off. Yeah. It just rubs off. If you surround yourself with people who are interesting and distinctive and funny, and it'll affect you.
Absolutely.
If you surround yourself with the opposite, that'll happen.
I love that. We've got Mel in the chat here saying, "This is so cute, topping up my positivity tank." And Mel, as an example of a human being who exudes humor and just loveliness. I saw her last week, and I left with a twinkle in my eye and a smile on my face. And this is exactly what it's all about. So thank you. That's a real burst of positivity. So thank you. Let's take the next one from Catherine. So Catherine says, does John, not Sir John, so she's acknowledged the appropriate level of formality.
Good.
Have any preferred techniques or processes to invoke creative thought when he's feeling creatively stuck?
Well, I mean, obviously going out for a walk is fantastic. But the thing that I used to do is I used to just go, let's just have a completely stupid idea. Let's just have a completely barking mad idea, make it funny, and then start talking about it. And it will relieve the kind of, you know, trauma around trying to come up with an idea. And if you do that, you'll relax and you'll have some fun, and all of a sudden other things will come to mind. But just have it so completely stupid, and write it down, put it up on the board, you know, and somebody will come in, look at it and go, wait a minute, that reminds me, or whatever, but, you know, and you'll be surprised how it helps. So we used to do that all the time. And in a funny way, going back to Flattery, everybody thought actually what I had done with that, what I was doing with that was coming up with a comfort to get people thinking about something else. And of course, with that, I was absolutely serious. But I think if you do that, you know, you kind of, it relaxes everybody else, because that's a really fucking stupid idea. If you have a really stupid idea, I can also have a completely stupid idea. And out of those stupid ideas can come absolute genius. And you think, why not? Why don't we do that? Why don't we challenge that? But I think the other thing too is being constantly connected to the world, you know, reading stuff, looking at things, reading things that other people don't read. You know, just feed you stuff. And that feeding, that's why I say, don't walk around with these things on. Don't walk around, you know, because, you know, when you're going out for a walk, take your headphones off and look around you. Inspiration's everywhere. Just, you know, you just need to notice it, just need to absorb it. But I do start with, let's do something completely bloody stupid. And the other thing too is, of course, juxtaposition. You know, you juxtapose one thing with something else that shouldn't be together. You know, and I always tell this story, and it was when I was at art school, and we're very early on, and we're in painting, we're doing painting, and you knew somebody was going to ask this. And you didn't want to be the one to ask it, but you thought, oh God, no, I'm going to be that stupid. And somebody always says to the lecturer, said, oh, tell me, you know, when you paint black, how do you make it really black? Thinking they were going to say, oh, well, you put blue into it, or you add green. And I always remember the wonderful teacher just looked at this fellow student rather witheringly and just said, put it next to white, you know. And that was a complete lesson in creativity, is juxtapose opposites. And then suddenly you go, yes, you know, most of Monty Python is juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. If you ever watch the poets and philosophers football match, I mean, it's the one of the, it's on, you can watch it on YouTube. Go watch it, the poet and philosophers football match. And it's basically a football match, except all the players are Aristotle and Wordsworth and kind of that. And it's just so funny. I mean, it's just instantly funny, and it's just a coin. And of course, you know, but it's just a wonderful juxtaposition. So juxtaposition is one thing. You know, that's why, you know, get a very tall man and a very short man, or get a very large man and a very small man, whatever, or a large woman and a small woman, or have a black woman and a pale woman, or whatever it might be. And all of a sudden you've got, oh, why are they so different? And the brain is trying to kind of work it out. The brain is trying, why are they? So the brain is paying attention. And that's what you're trying to get the brain to do. There are lots of little techniques, but go for a walk. I always say to people, you know, I did my best thinking when I wasn't thinking. That's the other thing.
It's the cliche thing, isn't it? That you have your best thoughts in the shower, isn't it?
And yeah, exactly. Yeah, you spend a lot of time in the shower, you get shriveled up. But you know,
yeah. Well, but you have great ideas.
Great idea. Quick, write it down. You want a wet pen? Don't you? Write that down.
I love that. Let's take the next one from Martin, who is himself an Effie award-winning marketer. So Martin, I think might be poking the bear here somewhat by asking the question, should creative processes be intuitive or data-driven?
I think the whole question about data is fascinating, you know, and it's a big, big question, this. Data informs, creativity imagines. And I think, you know, you've got to remember what data does. You know, it informs, it gets knowledge. You know, this is going on, that's going on. But creativity imagines. Imagination drives creativity. So you've got to have both, to a certain extent, both of those things. But very interesting, actually. And it depends on how and where you use it. So if you think about all of the great companies, none of them were built on data. None of them. You know, James Dyson didn't have data to say, you know, people want a bagless vacuum cleaner. They don't like the way the other ones suck. Steve Jobs would tell you that, you know, the iPhone, nobody said, I want something bigger. They all wanted something smaller. Elon Musk, you know, what he's done, he's not built anything on data. He's built it on intuition. So you have to decide, where am I? What am I doing? Am I just sustaining a brand at the moment? Or am I trying to think of something completely different So how you use the data, where you use the data is fundamentally important. But I think, you know, I think we've become obsessed with it. And I think, you know, we've got to sort of tame it to a certain extent and go, yeah, it's interesting. It's going to inform me. I mean, you know, there was no, you know, when Jeff Bezos set up Amazon, there was no data to say this is what people wanted. He said, I think I could sell books like this. Yes, later on, he's used a huge amount of data to go, those books are selling, those ones aren't, that's doing that. And then you use data. I mean, supermarkets use it on a day-to-day basis. But when you're imagining the future, mm-hmm. when you're if that's where you're going, then I'm not sure what data is going to tell you. It's just going to maybe inhibit you. And that's the problem. And that's why I think you've got to understand where it has value and why we should be using it. And of course, I love the fact that we now call it big data, don't we? It's no longer data anymore. It's big data. Oh, suddenly it's all more important. No, it's not. You know, and it's been around for thousands of years. You know, I always say, you know, that one of the greatest stories ever told, you know, the nativity came out of data collection, didn't it? You know, they'd all gone to register for the census and couldn't find, you know, I mean, it wasn't it, you know, kind of, you know, I mean, correct. I always think it's funny, you know, I always think it's funny about religion, isn't it? I mean, if it was the Son of God, why didn't God tell Joseph, you know, you better get on to booking.com because there are going to be a lot of people, you'll need a hotel room. And it didn't, did he? You know, I thought a bit lack of God to inform, you know, Joseph that his son is going to be now born in a bloody stable because he failed to book a hotel room. Jesus, what are you doing? That's a good name. Let's call him Jesus. I think. Anyway, sorry, I go on with things like that. But I think it's understanding data, understanding how and where to use it. And what value it has. Yeah,
bang on. No, it's that thing. You know, even the... You know, some of the folks who are, you know, major proponents of strategy, you know, you look at Mark Ritson, for example, you know, as asking him not too long ago, because, you know, it's diagnosis, strategy and tactics. You know, you understand the market, you understand what you want to say to them, and then you go out to the market. And they asked him whether there was a founder's prerogative, you know, on these things. You know, there was just that little bit of magic, that those little moments where you're like, you know, I'm going to do this because I'm going to do this, not because... you know, because the data tells me. And he went, yeah, of course there is, you know, and it's a very human thing. It's exactly that. There's a lovely follow-on question here actually from Baz, who is the guy who built our branding. So for those of you in the marketing...
Oh, lovely. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Who don't know, you've just made his day, honestly. But for those of you who don't know...
It's just great, Baz. Well done. I like it.
And
positives. Smile, yeah.
Baz says, focus groups hated the Cadbury's Gorilla advert, but the audience loved it. In a data-driven world, so following on from the last question, what's your advice to get stubborn clients to ignore data that could be very misleading, given the Cadbury's example?
Yeah, it's something that, you know, we had to live with constantly. And the trouble there is you're trying to get people to imagine something and imagine how different that's going to feel when they see it for real. And data is of absolutely no use whatsoever. It'll just drive you to conformity. I'm sorry, I don't have a magic solution to it. I suffered it throughout my career. I mean, Vorsprung-Durk technique, the research came back and said, don't do it. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I had a client who said, but we are German, so let's admit to it. The 501 campaign, when Levi's researched the actual product, the 501, kids hated it. Buttons, why would I want buttons? I mean, zips are much more convenient. They couldn't envisage how it could be. So you have that all the time. And in fact, the Launderette commercial didn't research very well. It was kind of fairly average, but the client, well, we've got nothing else. You've got to put it on air. And so, you know, you come across this all the time. You know, if you read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, he kind of explains why all that research doesn't work. And I think all you can do is just say to a client, look, you're going to put this in front of people. they aren't going to know how to judge it. And what they're going to do is give you rational reasons, not emotional reasons, because you're asking them to be rational when in fact they're emotional human beings. And they don't know how to tap into that in terms of answering questionnaires. But it's a problem that we had throughout our career. And I see no solution to it. It's just fire that client and go and work with one who wants to be a bit more daring, you know.
That's it.
Sorry, that wasn't that much helpful, was it?
No, well, you know, sometimes it's the truth, you know, and we've had plenty of answers over the course of time where the answer has been.
The other funny, I'll tell a very funny story. We were with Cadbury's, who were at that time lovely people, but terrible. They were lovely people, but they just researched Good Morning, you know. And we were running, this is like the early 90s, and we were running a campaign for a chocolate bar called Boost. And the great thing, it was on radio. And I kept getting the account man would come to me and say, John, we need some more scripts. And we're fine. And I said, wait a minute, we've just written six. Do you need another six? He said, well, we are now the biggest advertiser on radio. And the brilliant thing, we were spending something like, at that time, 3 million per annum on radio. And of course, what was brilliant about radio is nobody researches the scripts. Nobody did any research, even though they were spending 3 million. And so I said to them, whatever you do, don't try and get them to move on to television. Let's stay with radio. Because, and we were right, they got into DNAD and we did, you know, it was for a chocolate bar called Boost, and it was slightly rippled with a flat underside. I always remember the line. It was a great, great line. But nobody was researching it because, well, you don't research radio, do you? So they just went out, and the client would go, oh, yeah, okay. And it was Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer, and it was a great, great campaign, and I loved it. So get your client onto radio. Do something very funny. They won't research it.
That's fabulous. I mean, that's the takeaway from today's session. If there are any of today, it's been, just get your client on radio. That's the solution.
Get them on radio. love it.
You know, the hour has flown by, John. Thank you.
Well, so talking to you.
Well, I appreciate it. And you know, it's been really, really fabulous. And thank you to everyone in the community as well for your fabulous questions and the chat going on.
Yeah, great. If you can, I mean, seriously, this is where I do a bit of a sell. If you can go on and look at what we're doing on the Business of Creativity, it'll help you. And maybe you should sell it to your clients, because it will help them understand how to buy great ads.
100%. We'll make sure to link that in the follow-up email.
That's great. All right. Well, lovely talking to you all. And keep fighting the great fight. You know, keep fighting that creative fight. We need it.
That's fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
All right.
Thank you. Cheers, John.
Lovely talking to you. I'm going to go now. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Great stuff. Okay.
All right.
Talk again soon. Bye. Bye.